I started to seek out people that were really going through a tough time, whether their kids had, you know, been diagnosed with a certain disease, or the parents got let go, or someone just really going through it. Because I felt like if I could just spark a little bit of hope that some stranger is coming out of nowhere to help them, then that would really make a big impact.
Welcome to Lessons in Leverage, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of success. We'll help you unlock the secrets of leverage so you can amplify your impact in the world. Here is your host, Spencer Lowe.
Welcome back to another episode of Lessons in Leverage. Today, I have my friend Ryan Swick with us. Ryan has a really cool story, and I met Ryan actually at a conference, a Tony Robbins event, a few months ago. We were out in Fiji together and doing some really fun stuff, climbing up 50-foot poles and jumping off, and I was pretending I wasn't scared of heights, and yeah, we were having a good time, and I got to know him a little bit and really love his story, love some of the stuff he's working on, thought he'd be a great guest for the podcast. Ryan, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. Yeah, those 50-foot poles look a lot, not as tall from the ground, but once you get up there, it seemed like...
Yeah, it makes you feel a certain type of way up there. And what's funny is I, from the ground, was like, man, that's going to be so scary. And then actually getting up there wasn't as bad as I thought. I think because you had that rope on you, they gave you a little feeling of security. But I was just like, man, I'm out of shape, because I was like trying to climb up. By the time I got to the top, I like had my arms on the top, just like catching my breath. It's like, I'll go again. Just give me a second.
Be quick and get over with. And then you're like, well, I can't go anymore. I have to catch my breath first.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, being as tall as I am, like, I was kind of always, my legs were always at a bent state. So I was just like kind of doing a wall squat the whole way. I didn't really have a nice relaxing, like, release of the muscle. So yeah, it was fun. But anyways, it was good. It was good to confront a fear, you know, good to do something that allowed us to face our fears. I want to dive in and start with just a little bit about your background. I know you got a degree in, I want to say, industrial engineering. Was that right?
Yeah, that's right.
So you were kind of on the university traditional route. Tell me about what that route was for you, what that plan was, and then what took you on a 180 to something that's a little more high leverage than industrial engineering?
Yeah. Well, I thought, like, from when I was growing up, I'm like, I'm going to be a Major League Baseball player. I'm going to be drafted, you know, make millions of dollars. I don't really have to worry. But I was always really good in school as it was. Math was always a strong suit. So once I decided to hang up the cleats and just go and get a degree at a university, I went and pursued engineering. I first went there for aerospace engineering because two of my buddies were doing the same thing. I was like, well, we might as well do that. And then I realized how I was not really looking forward to being an aerospace engineer. And I found myself into industrial engineering, which they had like this core class where they would teach us about all the different fields. And when the industrial engineer speaker came, he started talking to us about, you know, the ways that they focus on efficiencies and processes, and how, you know, the Universal Studios Fast Pass was created from industrial engineers, and hospital ER wait times, airport security lines. And for some reason that just pulled to me, that called me, is like, that's what I want to do. So I switched my major to that, went through school, got my degree, graduated, and found a job doing manufacturing engineering for a printing company. And we printed scratch off lottery tickets, which I thought was a pretty cool industry to be a part of. So I'm in this field for probably about 5 years, doing well. Don't have any complaints. Love my company, love my boss and people I worked with. And I think I was like 26, around there at the time, when I had a couple buddies that had moved to California after college, that were always trying to get me out. Like, hey, you got to come out here. You got to come out here. And I just reached this like point, I think, where I was just like, okay, I'm going to come visit. And he was living in Newport at the time. And so once I visited Newport Beach, California, pretty much was hooked at that point, as this is where I'm going to move to. Because when you're single and you don't have kids or a family, it's a lot easier to move. So since I grew up in West Palm Beach, I went to school in Orlando. I moved to Tampa. I'd been everywhere in Florida. I figured if I'm ever going to leave Florida, it's going to be now while I have the time. And the stars just kind of aligned. So I decided to move out there without a job intact, thinking, you know, I got my degree, I'm working on my MBA at the time, and I'm like, I've got a good resume, I'm gonna find, you know, the perfect job and just pick right up where I left off. And that just was not the case at all. started going to pick up like these random side jobs just to bring in a little bit of income because I had a bunch saved up. But I finally found myself in a management role in manufacturing, bounced around to a couple of companies, and it just did not match. Like the culture wasn't what I was looking for, or the purpose of what we were doing. It wasn't really in alignment with me. So I started getting into more of a mindset of, well, you know, I've always wanted to own my own business because my dad owns his own business. He's always has. And I love the freedom. So I love traveling. And that was very appealing to me to be able to do that. And I figured if I was ever going to own my own business, I needed to learn sales in some aspect. And I didn't want to be on a salary anymore. I wanted to have the ability to make whatever I was earning, whatever I would go out and earn, the value that I could create. And so I found myself getting into sales in the most like random way. I found myself getting into the solar field.
How was that? How exactly did you find solar?
Well, I had a friend back in Tampa. He was working for Vivint Alarms, mm-hmm. alarm door to door. And he was telling me how he was doing well and everything was great. He worked outside, you know, the pay was pretty good. And I thought, well, I don't have any experience, which is what most of the sales jobs were looking for. So I went on Craigslist and I searched for Vivint Sales. And I found an ad and I hit him up. And lo and behold, Vivint also not only has an alarm part of their business, they had a solar part of their business. And I didn't think that I was doing solar. I walked in thinking that I was getting ready to go sell alarm systems. And I met this guy, Dane, and he basically said, no, this is for solar. And I felt more compelled to sell solar as an engineer, that I would maybe know more and that would help me in some way. But knowing how solar works literally doesn't help you at all in sales. So,
like, people don't buy based on how detailed you can get in your schematics.
No, yeah, it's crazy. I started breaking down how the silicon cells are made, and for some reason they stopped wanting to talk to me after that.
Eyes just glaze over, and they're like, "What am I doing? Why is this guy in my house?"
Yeah, so it was definitely a shock for me, but I think that it actually allowed me to increase my learning curve, or to shorten my learning curve in sales by being in the door-to-door space versus maybe in other fields of sales.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I did 8 years of door-to-door sales. I totally agree with that. It's so many reps so fast. If you're doing your job, you should be at least 100 doors a day. So like, people are answering, you're having conversations. I guess now with some of the phone sales, maybe you can get more reps, but it's a different feel with in-person. You get to really appreciate and use all the body language. You got a little bit more of a real in-person experience that you can get reps on. And the thing is, when you compare that to something like phone sales, long-term, you close big deals, you move up, you do big ticket stuff. You know, solar's a fairly big ticket, but you know, if you wanted to continue as a salesperson, all the biggest sales happen in person. So it's like, I love that about door-to-door. You're learning more than just how to talk. You're learning how to act, how to influence people. And that is such a high leverage skill. Was it just because of your dad that you realized that that was a high leverage skill, seeing that he had his own business? You're like, all right, to start my own business, I'm going to need to be able to sell. Was that how you kind of came to that conclusion?
No, I honestly didn't really understand business at that point. Like, I was kind of diving into it when I was getting my MBA, and I really started to learn a whole other side of business. But I remember growing up, like, looking at my dad, and, you know, he just went out and worked. Like, he was in the landscaping and kind of like that area and back in Florida. And so I didn't even know that he would have to do like flyers and advertise and sell people. I just assumed like you just go out there and, you know, you cut people's grass and you fertilize it and you know, it's just Florida. Like, everybody needs that. And so when I started getting into a space of like, okay, in engineering, I'm like, well, if I create a product, if I invent something, then it's going to be more than just having the great idea, because we all know you could have the greatest product, but if nobody wants to buy it, it doesn't do you any good in business. So I started to understand that a little bit more once I got into doing sales, that when I'm talking to people, it isn't just that, hey, this is a cheaper way for you to get electricity, and people were still not saying yes. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. I realized that there's a lot more to sales and a lot more to helping people, and it has to do a lot with communication. And when you're in door to door, you're It's body language. It's everything. You have so many more skills that you have to implement than if you're on the phone. And I felt like I was just dumped into this and was drinking water from a fire hose. And that's why it took me a long time to kind of really get a grasp of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's ultimately what it comes down to. I love the way you said that. I remember certain jobs I'd get in door-to-door, and I'd be like, man, this is the home run product. They're already buying one. I got a better one. It costs less. It's more for less. Who wouldn't buy that? I mean, this is, you know, just like taking candy from a baby. It's just, people are just going to eat this up. And you get out there, you're like, why are they saying no? And you realize, like, oh, there's sales resistance. As soon as they open the door, they do not, they don't just not trust me yet. They distrust me and they don't want to talk to me. I'm interrupting their life. So it's like, I have to be able to influence them to listen. And then I get past that. And it's like, great, they're listening now. Now I have to actually be able to understand how to get the message across them in a way that they will really receive and understand. So they have the information, good decision. And I got to create an emotional experience that makes them feel motivated, excited, and see how it's going to meet their emotional needs. It's like, oh man, I bit off something way bigger than I thought. I just thought I was out there giving away more for less. It was going to be easy. And there's so many aspects to it. And truly, you know, I know Tony Robbins once said that, you know, sales is leadership, you know, and I think that's a hyper simplification, but it's so true that the skill set that has defined so many aspects has been one of the highest leverage skill sets I've had, whether it goes to making a lot of money in sales, which I did, or starting a business. To start a business, you have to be able to sell. You have to sell people on your ideas, leading a business, managing people. Those skill sets translate to all those things. And so you get so much leverage from sales. And I've met people who are like, man, I want to start a business or I want to do this. But I don't like sales. I don't want to learn that. And it's like, good luck. Maybe be a co-founder with someone who sells, because you can't do it without it. And so it's such a high leverage skill. And I love that you were able to figure that out. If you don't figure that out, then you're kind of playing with a stacked deck. You're fighting uphill to be like, I want this thing, but I don't want to do sales. I don't want to learn that skill.
Yeah, one doesn't come without the other. And if it does,
that's the person who won the lottery. They bought one of the tickets that you made. That's awesome. All right, so you're doing sales, and you made this transition at first. Not seeing a lot of success, man. And that's a story for most people due to a roar. They get out there, they do it for a couple of weeks, they haven't made any sales, they give up. Or they get out there, they make one sale, they're like, oh, I'll try for another month, and then they give up. There's a lot of turnover in door-to-door sales because it's a really crappy job. I mean, you're dealing with just every day, many times a day, complete rejection and failure. And if your mindset's not right, it's just like, I hate my life. And then the bonus, what your reward is for that, is you also get to work at the times when everybody else is not working. So your social life is terrible, generally speaking. So it's like, here you go. Here's a job where you get to work when everyone else is not working. But when they're not working, you're working and back and forth. So your life is on this weird schedule, and you get to work weekends. That's the best time because everyone's home. So you get to work the weekends and the holidays and go interrupt people on their holidays. They love nothing anyone loves more than you knocking on their door Thanksgiving morning. I mean, so that. And then you just get to deal with their emotional tantrums that they throw at you. And so, yeah, that's the joy of sales.
The cherry on top of it all is you're 1099, so you don't even get paid if you get nothing that day. You could be out there for 10 hours and make $0 that day. That's the icing.
Man, that's the best. That's the best. You can make no money doing all that. Yeah, it's quite a pitch to convince people to sell. But the upside is, you learn this critical high leverage skill, and then you can make a whole lot of money doing it. So you stuck it out. You were willing to actually put in the work and develop that skill set. As you did that, obviously your career's gone really well. Now you're in a leadership position leading a large sales team for a big solar company. That's obviously gone really well. So when you get to that point, you're like, all right, things are going really well. Now I'm making the big bucks. This is what I always dreamed of with sales. Did you finally find fulfillment? Did you finally feel like, all right, I've got it all figured out. Life's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I wake up every day and, you know, I don't ever have any stress at all in my life. It's crazy.
But I love it.
That's definitely not the case. I think along the way to getting to where I am, the biggest perspective change I had to flip in my head was just, I needed to just go out and start helping people. Mm. I think that that's really been the core value of mine that's change my entire life, the whole trajectory of my life. And going through the process of learning these skills and really getting further into management as I started to produce really well, I learned that the more that I helped people, not just that my clients, but the people in my organization, my coworkers, that's when I started to get fulfillment. When I started to see their success and I started to see them achieve their potential and achieve the things that they were setting out to do, that's when I started to see fulfillment. So while, you know, we've really built up our business and our reps, we're up to like almost 100 sales reps right now. It's never like, well, once we get here, like we'll be happy. It's just like, we just want to keep bringing more people into the business because I know how it's changed my life. And if it's changed my life, someone who's never done sales, never in their life thought they would be doing sales, then I know that there's a lot of people out there that can have their lives changed. And I just want to be in a position to help them to do that.
Yeah. See, and that's, I mean, incredible. It's an incredible point because if you're doing sales for the money, there are a very select few who do sales for the money and then they last a long time because they make a lot of money. But I was someone who made a lot of money in sales and I didn't last because it wasn't worth it to me to feel unfulfilled. And I was in it for the money. I never made that jump, that transition to finding fulfillment, whether it's through helping my customers or helping, you know, employees or coworkers. I was just like, only reason I'm doing this shitty job is to make a lot of money. And so then I'd get my money and then I'd be like, oh, okay. And I felt empty still, you know, and I was still, you know, I was only like 19 at the time. So I was still trying to figure my life out, let alone fulfillment. But that being said, you know, later on in building my business, I was able to find that. And when people realize that there's no dollar amount where you're going to get to, that your stress is going to go away and all of a sudden you're going to feel fulfilled and life will just be rainbows. When people really, it's everyone says it, but you have to go through it. You have to get to whatever that dollar number is that you in your mind thought was going to make you feel that way. And then look in the mirror and go, wait, nothing's changed. And if nothing's changed, then I'm doing the wrong thing. Maybe I'm not doing the wrong thing in terms of my career, but I'm doing the wrong thing in terms of finding fulfillment. So tell me what it was, you know, you're getting into leadership roles. You're figuring out that really it's helping people that drives you. And that's actually what fulfills you. And so you're having that realization. What the hell is a Venmo challenge? Tell me about where things started to change and what a Venmo challenge is.
Yeah, well, this was like, I don't know if it was just, you know, the universe or God or whatever the stars that aligned for this happening at the same time. This was like during COVID, things were going on. This was probably around September. So it had cooled off, you know, for the most part from that initial huge, like, world shutting down thing. And so I was on TikTok or Instagram one day, and I saw this lady doing what's called the Venmo challenge. And she basically asked her followers to donate, you know, a dollar, 20 cents, $5, $10, whatever they could. And she would go to these restaurants where the servers, who, you know, didn't make any money during COVID because they were all shut down, they were struggling. So she would go, and after they would eat, she would leave them a tip of like $1,000. And you see, like, they record it. So you see their reaction. You see, like, how impactful that is for that person in that moment. And then you get a piece of that. Like, when I donated to that and I saw the reaction, I was like, wow, like, even though I'm all the way over here, I just feel this, like, amazing sense of, you know, like, I just helped this person who was really hurting. And I don't know what it was, but I just realized, like, it's really not that complex. Like, I could do that, you know? And it was something that I just felt like I was supposed to do. And so I'd set it out, like, I'm going to do this. And I started figuring out how I'm going to do it and how does she set it up with the camera and all this stuff. And so my very first one I did was a Carl's Jr. drive-thru. I was like, I don't even eat Carl's Jr. I think I ordered like a cup of water and they probably thought that was weird. And I ended up giving them like, I think it was like $40, you know? So it wasn't like this crazy thing, but, you know, for an employee at Carl's Jr. who's just at the drive-thru, $40, they were just kind of really confused. And I had put it out there and I don't think, maybe I got $2 that were Venmo'd to me and their $38 was my money that I did it, but I was trying to, you know, get some traction. So I started doing this every like week or 2 weeks, I think, in the beginning. And I just started to feel like something was building. Like I was really coming alive. Like when I was planning these things and I was figuring out how I'm going to do it and what time and where I was going to go and what person. So I think it was my third challenge. I had put it out on my Instagram, like who should I surprise next, right? At this point, it was all totally random. And my friend Nina back home, she suggested that I should do a hairdresser. And so that was the funniest thing because I don't have any hair. And so when I walked into the Great Clips, right? I walked in and I was like getting ready to be like, you know, yeah, I just want to get a beard trim because I was going to then just tip after that. Well, during COVID, California, they didn't allow. The governor said, no, nothing but haircuts. You can't do a shampoo. You can't do anything. And so I'm sitting in the chair like, well, I can't pay you anything. And she's like, no, like you can't pay me. And I was like, well, how about I just give you a tip then? She's like, for what? Like, I didn't do anything. And I was like, whatever, I'm already here. I've already like had this whole like anxiety because there was already there's three people in the store. And I'm like, I don't know who I'm going to even get. And so it just happened to be this lady who is now like just one of my closest, dearest friends. I gave her $105 tip. Like just that's what I had raised, which again, like 80.
With a $0 haircut.
Yeah. For nothing, not doing anything. I sat in the chair. She put the cape on. She took the cape off and I gave her $105. 80 of it was mine. And I just started seeing her tear up. And I'm like, wow, like I'm really making an impact. And lo and behold, she starts to tell me her story, how she just moved out to California from Georgia because her nephew was just diagnosed with cancer on Christmas, like a couple months prior to that. And it just like, we both broke down at that time. And I'm just like, this is crazy. Like, what are the odds that I went to this Great Clips, not a different one, that I walked in at the right time, that it was her turn in the rotation to pick me. And, you know, like I said, it was not like it was life-changing money, but I felt like so connected to her and to her family and what she was doing there. She was working to help support her family. And so at that point, I decided that I didn't want to just do random people anymore. I didn't want to just randomly pick people to help, even though I know that there's people out there that need help. I started to seek out people that were really going through a tough time, whether their kids had, you know, been diagnosed with a certain disease or the parents got let go or someone just really going through it. Because I felt like if I could just spark a little bit of hope that some stranger is coming out of nowhere to help them, then that would really make a big impact. And it wasn't so much also that it was the impact I was making for them. It was the hundreds of people that started to donate. And we were starting to do $1,000 a week, $1,500 a week. Like we raised almost $10,000 by the end of the year, starting in September, and seeing the messages from people like, this is amazing. And it's helped me to go out and help somebody else. It's inspired me to go out and do something for this person. So the message of hope and message of kindness was like way more than any dollar amount that we would have raised for that.
I mean, people sometimes, I think, overcomplicate helping or make it harder than it needs to be. I know that as I sort of have been more and more successful, I was like, you know, I want to find ways to give back and not just donate. Like, sure, I can donate money. That's fine. And I'm going to donate money to causes. But that's like, okay, we made a little impact for that cause somewhere, someday. You know, it's very disconnected. And there's so much value. My parents growing up, they would take us, and every year we did, 1 year for Christmas was presents. And it was like $40 a kid. We got very little because we didn't have a ton of money. And then the other year was a trip, some sort of family fun adventure, usually camping, because it's not very expensive. And a service project. So the money that we would have spent on gifts, we spent on a service project. And it was always something, you know, like making little hot meals that we'd take and hand out to the homeless in San Francisco, or that we'd, you know, we'd be involved in the service project. So it was being involved in a part of it. And that was always so fulfilling. And so, you know, with my family and my kids, I was like, I want this to be a part of Christmas every year. In fact, this is our first priority at Christmas, is let's go give. Let's see how we can, you know, do a service project. And I realized it's kind of hard. It's hard to like for sure get places that, you know, have a, like make the connection in person. It's easy to donate money. It's hard to be in person. You know, like first I was like, oh, we'll go, you know, help at like a food bank or something. It's like, they're all booked because everyone wanted to go help. It's like all the easy ways to help, like get booked up really quick. And so I was like, man, I'm surprised how hard this is. I got to plan better. And so what we ended up doing was the following year, we set up an event through my company where we'd put on Christmas for families. We'd give the presents and take care of everything for them. And it was because I couldn't find somewhere where I could do this. And so what I love about what you're doing is that it, yes, it's really rewarding for you because, you know, you get this leverage where instead of being able to just help with whatever your money you have to donate, you get to help in a bigger way, faster, for more people because everybody else is contributing. But I love that then they get to be a part of the process and they get to feel that experience and feel connected to the donation in a way that you don't get when you're just donating to a cause. You know, at, by all means, still donate to causes, donate to important causes. But there's this added benefit of I get to see the person. I get to see their joy. I get to really have this experience. Even though I'm not there, Ryan's going to be there and he's going to record it. And I'm going to get to see that this had a real impact for somebody. That is a real gift because that helps change people's hearts. And like you said, then they want to go out and be a part and be involved and do things. And we need that more now than ever, given how disconnected we've become. We've saw how digital we've become, how disconnected we are. We need more than ever to be looking out for people around us and finding simple ways where when you're just in the line at the grocery store and someone's card gets declined, when you're, you know, at the restaurant and you can tell that that waiter needs it or whatever, there's all these ways you can go do something. And so you're making it accessible to people through you with the donations, and you're making it obvious to them that there's more ways you can help than needing to do something big. Doesn't always have to be a huge donation to a big cause with a big 10-foot check. It's like, it could just be a little donation to a person at, you know, a restaurant, and that could change their life. So how has that process changed you? What has that done for you in your life? You know, you're still working in sales. You have your income stream there. How has this, you know, these Venmo challenges on Instagram, how's that started to change your perspective on your future, on what you want on life?
Yeah, I really started to see the impact that it can make on somebody that, you know, if they're shy or they're not somebody who's going to go out and help people, but they feel like they can still make an impact by doing this. Because, you know, when you get to see, when you record the interaction, you get to see the person that you're impacting, that adds so much value. And then even for the person, I think that trust is a big thing. Like, is my money going to this cause, right? Sometimes you donate to an organization, you have no idea where your dollar went, but you get to see physically, like, this is your dollar I'm handing to them. And it just kind of started my brain thinking on like how I wanted to continue doing this. And it was at the time where I went to my first UPW for Tony. And I just decided, like, you know, this was at the time I was doing terrible in sales. I was like, you know, I want to go and be a travel coach. Like, I love traveling. I love traveling the world. And I wanted to take people on these trips and have these experiences that include not just going and traveling and vacationing, but like doing things for other people, having some impact in a way that you're helping communities that you have no idea even exist at the moment, but you get to see the culture and you get to see how they live and find a way to connect to them. And so, you know, ideally, that's what I would love to do. You know, I feel like I don't know my purpose fully in life, but I do know that it has to do with something at helping people. So creating a nonprofit where I can continue to help people that are going through tough times, and maybe at some point get to a point where I can travel the world and go from community to community and help in certain ways, you know, hopefully going back and creating that travel coaching business where I can take people on trips to help people and then do a little bit more hands-on for those people that do want to take action with helping versus just donating. You know, I think that there's a lot more that people will take away and their lives can be affected by doing that hands-on portion. And that's kind of the thought of the nonprofit is, you know, I don't want it to be traditional where it's like, yeah, just donate and we're going to go and support this cause. It's like, I want to create these events and do these things that you can come and be a part of and not only donate with your money, but also with your time, because I think that that makes a bigger impact in the world.
Yeah, and certainly in your life, to get to be a part of it and experience it. You know, it's a very special feeling that if, you know, for people that don't get it very often, when they're able to help someone, they see someone's life change, really awaken something inside of you, whether you're spiritual or religious or whatever it is, there's a deep human need that you can't feel any other way. There's not a similar emotion or state to it, that it's really just through giving and connecting with someone in that way that you get to experience that. And so it's such an amazing gift. And I love the way that you're bringing that gift to people and inspiring them, making a difference and helping people along the way. And I certainly hope that you can turn that into a full-time business so that you can have an even bigger impact.
All right.
All right. Well, if people listen to the podcast, you know, the whole concept of this show is leverage. And you've shown, I mean, how you can acquire skills to get more leverage in your career, make more money with sales. You've shown how, you know, you can get more leverage using social media and building an audience and a following to have a bigger impact for good, which I love, because sometimes leverage has a negative connotation to it. And it's really just a multiplier. It's having a bigger impact in whatever area that you're using leverage. So I love those examples. If people want to get involved, they want to help you with a Venmo challenge, they want to do something to contribute to what you're doing, how do they do that?
I think for me, it's like I'm like an open book. I like to help in any way possible. So for me, it's just connecting. You know, I've had a few people reach out, like, do you have any ideas on what I could do? And I love just connecting and sharing things that I've done and how I've done it, because I just don't think that there's really a need to hold that stuff back. You know, if people really want to make an impact, then we should all be open and we should all be able to help each other to do that. Obviously, you know, if you're not local or if it's just something you want to do monetarily, then, you know, as we start doing more events with our nonprofit, which is called the Nexus of Hope, then, you know, we'll be posting and raising money for different events that we're going to be doing throughout the year. But again, just connecting with me on social media or whatever. I'm an open book. I love sharing and helping people whenever I can.
Are you guys going to be raising money for Thanksgiving baskets in 2024? I know that that's something you've done past years. You have plans around that for this year?
Yeah, we have. We're tightening down the hatches on, because, I mean, it started with 13 baskets. So we pretty much just, we've been winging it as we go. And last year we did 600 baskets. And it's just reached the point where we want to continue to grow and impact more people, that me going to the store 2 days before and buying, you know, 600 items of each thing and then packing it the night before, I have like amazing people that volunteer to come help pack the baskets and then passing them out. We want to be a little bit more strategic. And that was the idea with the nonprofit, was reaching out to businesses and stuff where we can organize, because most of them, you know, they're not going to do anything unless they can have some tax benefit to it. So allowing us that avenue to start planning and talking to different companies to donate and get these things more organized. The goal hopefully will be at least 1,000 baskets this year that we'd like to create. So we're going to start planning that probably in the next couple months.
For what it's worth, when we do our event every year, we partner with a nonprofit, and then we're able to use their code at the store, and the store gives us tax exempt, and they give us like a 20% discount. So we shopped at Target for all our families, and the local store, I think, gave us 20 or 30% off everything and tax exempt. So we were able to help more families and buy more that way. So you could partner with an existing one, but if you've already got it formed and it's all set up with the Nexus of Hope, then obviously you can just use that one. But yeah, that there is huge benefit to having a formal nonprofit for that exact reason, that then businesses can get tax benefit and they're willing to do some things they wouldn't otherwise be able to help with costs. So that can increase the impact. And then, yeah, so if anybody listening wants to be a part of that project, 600 families, full Thanksgiving dinner last year. It's an incredible accomplishment, targeting over 1,000 this year. So follow Ryan on Instagram. He posts videos there. It's RyanCwick, and we'll put the link in the show notes so that you can obviously see it there. And then the nonprofit, their page is at The Nexus of Hope, and so you can follow them there on Instagram. And if you want to just donate money and help fund Thanksgiving for families in need and be able to watch the video and see the impact that you had, feel free to be a part of it that way. If you live or are willing to travel down to Southern California, feel free to reach out to him there. You also let me know if I can make it down to SoCal, I'd love to come help, man. So keep me in the loop on that project, and we'd love to be involved.
We'll be set up the dates and starting to put out some more stuff. We'll be doing back to school stuff. I want to do a Memorial Day event coming up for veterans. So just looking for more ways to make impact, and I appreciate it.
I love it. All right, man. Well, we will talk soon. Thank you so much for coming.
All right, Spence. Have a good one, brother.
Hey, before you go, I have a small request. Our mission is to empower as many people as possible to maximize their potential through the power of leverage. Could you help us in this mission by leaving a review on iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube? And if you know just one person who would benefit from today's episode, would you please share it with them? Your support means the world to us, and we are thrilled to have you in the community. Thank you for being a part of our journey and helping us grow. You can find show notes for today's show and past shows at lessonsinleverage.com, which also has links to connect with me personally and connect with our various podcast channels across your favorite social networks. A big thanks to Solve.cloud, who sponsored this episode. They're a group of expert consultants that help SaaS and financial services companies to implement, optimize, and manage Salesforce.com. They can help you with custom integration solutions and are helping customers to implement some of the most important generative AI technologies. You can find them at Solved.cloud. That's SOLVD.cloud is the URL. Thanks again, and we'll talk soon.